Well, this is message number two from the book of Daniel in our new series on the book of Daniel, and I'm looking forward to this. This is part two of what we started last week on the orchestration of God. Do you understand the idea, the concept that God rules in the affairs of men? We sometimes call that the sovereignty of God. It's the control of God in the affairs of men, and it's sometimes referred to as the orchestration of God's agenda. God is at all times working in your life and the life of the people around you, and what we see today, working in the entire world, which is just crazy to imagine all the ways that the Lord is always busy in our world. So today from Daniel chapter 2, verses 24 through 49 on God's sovereignty over the whole world, which is great. Albert Gurtley, a missionary doctor, was traveling to Thailand where he would serve, and he is away for a while. He wanted to get back and get going again at his clinic. And while he's trying to make his way back, there were four delays. In the first place, there was a visa problem. So, delay, trying to get his visa squared away. And then he went to a taxi driver who said he would take him to this area near Bangkok where the hospital clinic was. But the taxi driver said, I'm not going to take you by yourself. I want to bring more than one customer. So the taxi driver went around trying to recruit people that he could, you know, bring into the cab along with Dr. Gertler. So that took an extra hour. Then that same taxi, after waiting all that time, had an accident. So, brother, another delay. And then, last of all, because of that delay from the taxi being in an accident, now he missed the train that he was supposed to catch to take him back. Eventually, he does indeed get to his hospital, his clinic near Bangkok. For whatever reason, he just thought, you know, before I go home, which is on the hospital campus, I'm just going to stop over at the clinic and see how things are going. So without even going home, he goes to the hospital clinic. He walks into the area where the operating room is, and he sees these the hospital staffers all gathered around a bed, and this fellow is suffocating. He can't breathe. And the doctor there, the national doctor, couldn't get him intubated. And Dr. Gertler is an anesthesiologist by specialty. And, of course, they intubate people every single surgery. So he saw this man is dying, and everybody's scurrying around. He goes into the midst of all this confusion. And he takes the device where they, you know, pull the tongue back so you can stick the tube in. And he just deftly stuck it in there. And the guy could breathe. And he saved the guy's life. Crazy. Have these four delays. He walks in instead of going home, thinking, I just want to go to the clinic. Walks in. This guy can't breathe. And he intubates him and saves his life. Just like that. Crazy. The Lord is just orchestrating the whole world. And we sometimes forget about it. But that's really true. In the spring of 1993, my oldest son was 7 years old, and he was playing Little League Baseball. I'm standing next to this guy who happens to be a ministerial student at a very small seminary here in this area. And he's talking to me. He says, you know, there's a tiny Baptist church on Indian River Road that's struggling. They only have a few people left, and I think I'm going to approach them about becoming their pastor. Well, I had never heard of that church before. You know the rest of the story, right? Here I am. That crazy conversation, standing next to the, you know, backstop in Little League, changed the trajectory of my life. This is what the Lord is always doing. God rules in the affairs of men. The littlest things sometimes cause you to go on a deflection in a direction you never otherwise would have gone that was important for your life. And it was God's agenda, His orchestration. And you would never, ever have known that. And by the way, I didn't even know this Little League dad. I mean, I knew him, but I don't remember him now. I saw him a couple times playing baseball, or when my kids were playing baseball. That's all. All right. So last week, we talked about God's special orchestration in the life of young Daniel. Remember, he goes into this Babylonian captivity. He's captured, right? Because Judah lost the war to Nebuchadnezzar. So he's captured and taken where he never wanted to go, to Babylon, which is the headquarters of idolatry and witchcraft on planet Earth. And now Daniel has to go there. He has, as a captive, taken for a eunuch. You know what that means? And no little boy dreams about that when he grows up. And now he is in this headquarters of idolatry on planet Earth. And it's terrible, right? 15-year-old kid. 2 years into this, Nebuchadnezzar has the dream. Today we're going to talk about that dream. He has this dream, and because Daniel is now part of the Magi, the magicians, the Chaldeans, these are the occult practitioners, and Daniel doesn't practice the occult. He prays to the real God in heaven, and so God helps Daniel with a different spirit than those around him. And by the way, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego as well. And so Daniel is now with the wise men, the Magi, the Chaldeans, and the decree has gone out from the king that they should all be killed because they can't answer the king's question, which troubles them. So in that context, Daniel is raised up to answer the king's question, saving his life, the lives of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And of course, that sets Daniel on a path to become a truly extraordinary prophet in the Old Testament. And today we're going to talk about that some. But so what you see is the Lord managing Daniel's life on a micro level. You know, one 17-year-old kid brought to a place where he never wanted to be. Micro. And yet that orchestration isn't so unique, because at a macro level, we're going to see that the Lord was doing something perhaps even greater than the micro level. So today, macro. And so here we are, God's rescue. The decree goes out that Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego are all going to be killed, with all the Chaldeans, all the magicians, all the occult practitioners. They're all going to be killed because nobody can answer the king's question. And then Daniel and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego pray that the Lord will give them the answer so that they don't have to die. So, verse 19, then the secret was revealed to Daniel in a night vision. Then Daniel blessed the God of heaven. Daniel answered and said, blessed is the name of God forever and ever, for wisdom and might are his. And he changes the times and the seasons. He removes kings, and that's what we're talking about today. He removes kings and sets up kings, the macro level, not just working in the life of a wonderful 17-year-old kid. And, you know, we're so thankful that the Lord worked in the life of a wonderful 17-year-old kid. But besides that, the Lord also sets up kings and removes kings, whatever he wants. And so he removes kings and sets up kings. He gives wisdom to the wise and knowledge to those who know understanding. He reveals the deep and secret things. He knows what is in the darkness, and the light dwells with him. I thank you and praise you, O God of my fathers, who has given me wisdom and might and has made known to me now what we desired of you. For you have now made known unto us the king's matter. Therefore, Daniel went to Arioch, whom the king had ordained to destroy the wise men of Babylon. He went and said to him, do not destroy the wise men of Babylon. Bring me in before the king, and I will show to the king the interpretation. I have the answer. All right, so here's what happens. Daniel goes before the king. Then Arioch brought in Daniel before the king in haste, said to him, I have found a man of the captives of Judah who will make known to the king the interpretation. The king answered and said to Daniel, whose name is Belteshazzar, that's his Babylonian name, not Daniel, but so it is. Are you able to make known unto me the dream which I have seen and the interpretation of it? Daniel answered in the presence of the king and said, the wise men, the astrologers, the magicians, the fortune tellers cannot show to the king the secret which the king has demanded. But there is a God in heaven who reveals secrets and makes known to the king Nebuchadnezzar what shall be in the latter days. Your dream and the visions of your head upon your bed are these. And then he begins to tell the dream. All right, so just picture this. With their lives on the line, Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego pray that the Lord will give Daniel, in particular, the information that he needs to tell the king what his dream is. And this, you think, what is the likelihood of any of this? I mean, does the Lord really do things like this? You know, has he done things like this in history? And what we're going to see today, the dream that Daniel interprets is just like crazy impossible. It's amazing. It's wonderful. I read sometime back about years ago, one lady said, when I just hear the term Mesopotamia, it brings calm to my heart. I said, why Mesopotamia? I said, oh, because That's where Babylon is. Mesopotamia is between the Tigris and Euphrates. The word meso is middle, and like Potomac, that's river. In between the rivers, Tigris and Euphrates, and Babylon is in between the rivers. And she said, every time I just hear the word Mesopotamia, it brings calm to me, because that's where Daniel was. And the Lord saved Daniel, and the Lord saved Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and the Lord gave all these amazing prophecies. If I hear the term Mesopotamia, I just relax. And that's because Daniel's life, and of course, everything that takes place in the book of Daniel, is so extraordinary. All right, so Daniel is going to tell the king not only the dream that the king has evidently forgotten, but he's going to tell the dream and the interpretation what the dream means. So verse 29 of chapter 2, Daniel. As for you, O king, your thoughts came into your mind upon your bed. What should come to pass after this? You're wondering about the future. And he who reveals secrets makes known to you what shall come to pass. God is going to tell you what the future is. But as for me, this secret is not revealed to me for any wisdom that I have more than any living person, but for their sakes who shall make known the interpretation to the king. That is for me and Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego all together, so you don't kill us. So that's why we're telling you this. And so that you might know the thoughts of your heart. God wants you to know what the future is, so that's why you had the dream, and that's why I'm going to tell you about it right now. Verse 31, you, O king, saw, and behold, a great image, and the image looks like a man. A great image, this great image, whose brightness was excellent, stood before you, and the form of it was frightening. This image's head was of fine gold, his breast and his arms of silver, his belly and his thighs of bronze, his legs of iron, his feet part of iron and part of clay. You saw till a stone was cut out without hands, which struck the image upon his feet that were of iron and clay and broke them to pieces. Then the iron, the clay, the bronze, the silver, the gold were broken to pieces together, became like the chaff of the summer threshing floors, and the wind carried them away so that no place was found for them. And the stone that struck the image became a great mountain and filled the whole earth. This is the dream, and we will tell the interpretation of it before the king. So King Nebuchadnezzar had forgotten the dream, but surely when Daniel explains to him the dream, he says, yes, 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 that's it. So Daniel says, that's what you dreamed, and now I'm going to tell you what it means. So we continue. Verse 32, this image's head was of fine gold. In verse 37, you, O king, are a king of kings, for the God of heaven has given you a kingdom, power, and strength, and glory. And wherever the children of men live, he has given the beasts of the field and the birds of the heaven into your hand, has made you ruler over them all. You are this head of gold. So you see, the book of Daniel is just going to interpret itself. We don't have to wonder what the symbolism is, because Daniel tells us. So you see this image, the head is gold. Nebuchadnezzar, you are the head of gold. Your kingdom, the Babylonian Empire, is the head of gold. And you know that that is what brought Daniel to captivity in 605 or so B.C. Nebuchadnezzar became, you know, the emperor of the civilized world. And Daniel was carried off into captivity by Nebuchadnezzar. He says, King Nebuchadnezzar, you are the head of gold, and you will remain the head of gold until 536. Daniel doesn't say that, but I'm telling you that. All right, verse 31. You, O king, saw, and behold, a great image of a man. Verse 32. This image's breast and his arms were of silver. You are this head of gold, and after you shall arise another kingdom inferior to you. So in the image, you have a head of gold, and then the arms and chest are silver. And Daniel says, Nebuchadnezzar is the head of gold, and after you shall rise another kingdom. So what kingdom comes next? Now, we know from history, but we could also know from the book of Daniel, because in chapter 5, verse 28, which we'll come to pretty soon, we have the feast of Belshazzar with the handwriting on the wall. And remember that they bring in Daniel, and Daniel says, your kingdom has been given to the Medes and the Persians. That's the great Persian Empire. And that comes into being in 536 when Persia conquers Babylon. All right, so we know the head of gold. We know the arms and chest of silver. And what comes next? By the way, Daniel says, and that kingdom is going to be inferior to yours. Inferior in the sense that the kings of Persia had a hard time. While it is true that Persia conquered Babylon, the Chaldeans, that is, the astrologers, the magicians, the idolaters, the Satan worshipers, they constantly agitated against the Persian government. On two separate occasions, the Chaldeans, the astrologers, you know, Daniel's band, but not Daniel himself personally, but the people he was overseeing, they tried to install their own king in the place of the Persian king because they didn't want to have the Persians rule over them. So twice they tried to install their own king, and the rebellion had to be put down. So anyway, the kings of Persia were great, but they constantly had infighting, this threat of revolution. And you'll see that when we come to chapter 6, there's this great emphasis on the law of the Medes and the Persians. And that meant that the king himself could not change the law. The law was bigger than the king. Of course, we like that as Americans. That's the way it should be, right? Lex Rex. The law is king, not any human being. But in those days, that would be considered inferior because Nebuchadnezzar could do anything he jolly well pleased. And there's not one person who could say one thing against him. So the next kings that come along, they can't just do whatever they please. They are under the law of the Medes and the Persians. And so we know what the arms and chest are of silver. That's the Persian Empire. Then there's more. Again, beginning of verse 31. You, O king, saw and behold a great image of a man. This image's belly and thighs were of bronze. You are this head of gold, and after you shall arise another kingdom inferior to you, and another third kingdom of bronze, which shall bear rule over all the earth. And this is the great Greek Empire. So Persia conquered Babylon, and then the Greek Empire rose after Alexander the Great conquered Persia. And that was in the 300s. Now, remember where we are. Just for, you know, round numbers' sake, we're about 600 B.C. Alexander the Great comes along in 330. So let's say about 300 B.C. So the Persian Empire rises in the 300s. Daniel is in the late 500s, let's say 600. We're talking about essentially 300 years in the future. Can you imagine? Daniel is standing before King Nebuchadnezzar, and he's talking about 300 years in the future. Here we are, you know, in the early 2000s. We'd be talking about things that are going to take place in the 2300s if we were like Daniel. Can you imagine? Stand before somebody, let's say you're standing before the President of the United States, and you're going to say, let me tell you what's going to happen in the year 2300. Can you imagine? That's what Daniel is doing here. This is extraordinary. All right, so now we know that the chest and arms are Persia, silver. Belly and thighs are the Greek Empire, bronze. What comes next? Verse 31 again to get us going. You, O king, saw, and behold, a great image of a man. This image's legs were of iron, his feet part of iron and part of clay. You are this head of gold. After you shall arise another kingdom, and another third kingdom of bronze. And the fourth kingdom shall be strong as iron, inasmuch as iron breaks in pieces and subdues all things. And as iron that breaks all these, it, this fourth kingdom, shall break in pieces and bruise. Well, this can only be the mighty Roman Empire. And it doesn't begin until 63 BC, and then it goes, you know, well into the ADs. We're like 486 with the fall of Rome. All right, so Daniel is seeing the mighty Roman Empire. This is just so crazy. When Daniel was talking about, you know, Persia rising, which was 536, that's impressive because, you know, Daniel is 17 years old when he's interpreting the king's dream, give or take, about 17 years old. And he's talking about what happens when Persia conquers Babylon. Well, Daniel's going to be about 80 years old by the time this happens. So now he's 17 interpreting the king's dream. And he says, and when I'm 80, I mean, he doesn't say it just like this, but that's, you know, the point. And when I'm 80 years old, Persia is going to conquer you. It's like, well, how do you know what's going to happen when you're 80 years old? You're only 17. But that's just the beginning. And then he says, and then in the 300s BC, centuries from now, Alexander the Great is going to conquer Persia. Like, well, how do you know? And it's said in the book of Daniel, we can look and see that Greece is actually named. In chapter 8, the whole thing is about Greece. And you'll see when we come to chapter 10, we're talking about spiritual warfare. There's talk about, you know, Greece conquering Persia. It's just crazy. Like, how do you know, Daniel? You're just a kid anyway. How do you know? And then that's not enough. You know, 300s BC, talking about the rise of the Greek Empire. That's not enough. Now, he's going to go, you know, way off the reservation, and he's going to talk about the mighty Roman Empire, which doesn't happen until 63 years before the time of Christ. And the Roman Empire isn't named specifically as the Roman Empire, but it's the mighty Roman Empire. I mean, how can you not know? It's the, if we ask, you know, what empires do you know about from ancient history? You say, I know of one, the Roman Empire. It's what everybody knows about. And the legs of iron, because it breaks everything down. It's the strongest. It's the mighty Roman Empire. And it is named in a sense, because in chapter 11, we're going to talk about this wicked guy named Antiochus Epiphanes, a Greek king. And the Roman Empire intercepts Antiochus Epiphanes when Antiochus was wanting to conquer Egypt. And Daniel knows this. And he says in chapter 11, The ships of Kittim, we would say the island of Cyprus, just off the Mediterranean coast from the Holy Land, the ships of Kittim intercept Antiochus Epiphanes. And when the Jewish rabbis were translating that word Kittim into Greek from Hebrew in Daniel, the rabbis said, the ships of the Romaioi, the Romans, are going to intercept Antiochus Epiphanes. So Kittim was controlled by the Romans. And before 70 years before Jesus was born, we had the rabbi saying, oh, yeah, that's going to be the mighty Roman Empire. The ships of Kittim, the Romaioi, are going to come and give a halt to the Greek Empire. Just crazy what we're talking about here. All right, and this map, just in case you're curious, this is what the mighty Roman Empire looked like at about the time of Christ. And as you can see, we're going all the way to Spain on the left side, and we come around the entire Mediterranean world and get a little, on the south side, see just a little sliver of North Africa, which was always a part of the Roman Empire. When you get down by Egypt, at the bottom right-hand corner of the map, well, they had all of Egypt, so there's a peninsula running down from Egypt. But that's the mighty Roman Empire at about the time of Christ. And we've labeled the countries here, so you can see that the Roman Empire included such countries as Spain and France. You see the UK up there, the island of UK. And so they controlled most of what we call the UK today, a lot of Germany, and then what we call Croatia, Bosnia, Serbia, controlled that. And then you go down into the Greek peninsula, so they controlled Greece, and then Turkey, and that's basically the Bible lands where the Apostle Paul was constantly traveling in Turkey. And then when you come down to Syria, Iraq, and coming down Israel, Jordan, Egypt, all of those places, that's the mighty Roman Empire. All right, so that's what Daniel is predicting. Now, verse 41. And as you saw the feet and toes, so remember the legs are made out of iron, right? And the feet and toes are made out of iron, but not pure iron. Iron and clay mixed, all right? So the legs and the feet are one empire, but when you get to the feet, it's weird. It's altered. It's like Rome with a twist, hybrid Rome. All right, and as you saw, the feet and toes, part of potter's clay and part of iron, the kingdom shall be divided. But there shall be in it of the strength of iron, and as the toes of the feet, verse 42, as the toes of the feet were part of iron and part of clay, so the kingdom shall be partly strong and partly broken. And as you saw iron mixed with miry clay, they shall mingle themselves with the seed of men. So we're talking about a mixed population, mingled seed of men. All right, a mixed population. And as you saw iron mixed with miry clay, they shall mingle themselves with the seed of men, but they shall not cling to one another, even as iron is not mixed with clay. You can't make iron and clay mixed together. You could just bust it right off, the clay, right? All right, so this is a composite of clay and iron in the feet and toes. And this composite, then, is going to be Rome, because it's iron, but it's Rome not quite right. Something's weird about this. Now, this is really important. So don't check out on me here. This is where Daniel is going to shine his very brightest. All right. Now, of course, this is an image of a man. So how many toes does the image have? 10. Just bear that in mind for now. And you're going to see that when we start talking about the feet that are part iron and part clay, we're talking about the end times. And I'll show that to you as we go. Now, I know you can't read this very well, but I wanted you to see just sort of at a glance what is color-coded here, because Daniel is going to say the same thing in chapter 7 that we're reading about today in chapter 2. And then what's really fascinating is that when we get to the book of Revelation, John the Apostle is going to say the same thing that Daniel said. As a matter of fact, we'd like to remind you that the book of Revelation looks like it was written, of course it's under inspiration, but it looks like it was written with the Daniel prophecies open side by side with it. It's just crazy. They go together. All right, so what we've seen here today in chapter 2 is that there are going to be these, the fourth kingdom, so Babylon, Medo-Persia, Greece, and mighty Rome, the fourth kingdom. The mighty Rome is strong as iron, and iron breaks in pieces, and it shall break in pieces. And then when you get to the toes, how many toes? 10 toes. When you get to the toes, it's going to be clay and iron mixed together. And then the toes of the feet were part of iron, part of clay. So the kingdom shall be partly strong and partly broken. All right, so that's what we've read. Now, when you come to chapter 7, notice some similarities, and you can see the color code might help you here. After this, I saw a fourth beast, because in Daniel 7, there are four kingdoms, and each kingdom is represented as a beast. So we have the fourth kingdom again. I saw the fourth beast, exceedingly strong, had great iron. What? Iron. What? Iron. Oh, okay, so that's just like Daniel chapter 2. And it had great iron teeth, and it devoured in broken pieces. What? Broken pieces. See, above in the, you know, green font, chapter 2. Oh, yeah, we know about that because we saw it. Oh, by the way, and chapter 7 is written like 50 years. That was, you know, Daniel's prophecy in chapter 2 is when he's 17, give or take. Well, this one in chapter 7 is when he's like 50 years later. And so it says the same thing, but 50 years later. All right. And so in Daniel chapter 2, the fourth kingdom breaks everything in pieces. In Daniel chapter 7, the fourth kingdom breaks everything in pieces. And it's all iron. And it has 10 horns. What did the vision in chapter 2 have for toes? 10 toes. 10 toes, 10 horns. It's all the same. We come to verse 8. There came up among them another little horn with eyes like the eyes of a man, a mouth speaking great things. And I wish to know, Daniel says, I want to know the truth about this fourth beast whose teeth were iron. What were they? Iron. And his nails of bronze, which devoured and broke in pieces. Oh, yeah, yeah, we know about that. And 10 horns. I wanted to know about them. And it says in green font again there in verse 23, he broke everything in pieces. And the 10 horns are 10 kings. And then at the very bottom of that slide, you might be able to pick out in the yellow font where it says, and this happens for a time and times and the dividing of times. So when you see that in prophetic literature, Daniel and Revelation, you see time is 1 year, times is 2 years, that's three, and half a time, that's 3.5. So all this is going to go down in a period of 3.5 years. This will be the last 3.5 years of the world as we know it, what we call the Great Tribulation, the last 3.5 years of the whole tribulation. All right, now all that we just said in Daniel is found here in Revelation chapter 17 as well. The 10 horns. Oh, well, we saw 10 horns in Daniel chapter 7. And here we're in Revelation. 10 horns again. We know all about this. The 10 horns which you saw are 10 kings, which have received no kingdom as yet. But they receive power as kings, 1 hour with the beast. These have one mind, give their power and strength unto the beast, Antichrist. And they shall make war with the Lamb, and the Lamb shall overcome them. That's Armageddon. So Daniel is saying the same thing that John is saying in the book of Revelation. It's about the end of the world, the last 3.5 years of the world as we know it, the Great Tribulation, and bringing us right to the Battle of Armageddon. All right. Now, this comes to bear on your life. This comes to bear on what you see in the news all the time right now. Both Daniel and John were talking about an evil 10-nation alliance in the area of the old Roman Empire. And you can see that in all of the visions, and we'll see it better when we get to chapter 7. In all these visions, it is the Roman Empire. And of course, when Jesus was born in Bethlehem, what empire was in power? the mighty Roman Empire. So we have, in every case, the Roman Empire, but then it gets weird. It's like the Roman Empire, but it's not quite right. So we have legs of iron, mighty Roman Empire, and then you get to the feet, it's like, no, that's not quite right. When you get to the feet, you see this transition from the normal Roman Empire that we all know about and was in power when Jesus was born to, yeah, that's the Roman Empire, but it's just weird. It's not the same. Now the feet are not strong. They're mixed with clay, and that's never going to bind. It's not going to work. And so we find the mighty Roman Empire has not become quite so mighty. It's not quite right. It's transition. In Daniel chapter 7, which we'll get to in a few weeks, in Daniel chapter 7, it's the same thing. You have this fourth beast that's like a dragon, and he has 10 horns. Like, okay, a 10-nation confederation on this, you know, mighty Roman Empire, sure. But then it says, one little horn rises to prominence. So it used to be little, now it's big. And that one is in place when Jesus returns and judges it. Says the Ancient of Days comes, sets up his kingdom, and it judges that little horn. So it's like, okay, so it's the mighty Roman Empire, but then there's something weird. Like this one leader becomes like super important, and he's in power when Jesus returns, when Messiah comes. And then in the book of Revelation, it's the same thing. We have this dragon beast with seven heads and 10 horns, and then the horns, there's one prominent horn, and it's in place when Jesus returns. So we've gone from like what we call the old Roman Empire to something that's is really a lot like the Roman Empire, but it's not quite right. It's like weird. It's the Roman Empire, but it's weird. It's a hybrid. It's Rome with a twist. It is Rome, the Roman Empire, in an altered state. And it's everywhere in Daniel. You come to Revelation, it's the same thing. From today's current events, we might expect a great politician to rise up in the area of the old Roman Empire. And this great politician, when he comes, will probably come from NATO or the European Union. You might expect that because, and we'll show you just a minute, that's intimately related to the old Roman Empire. You're going to see that he is going to probably, by force and diplomacy, he is probably going to solve what we call Europe's immigration problem and also the Palestinian crisis. So the immigration crisis and the Palestinian crisis. We expect that that might very well be the case. Part of the solution is going to be rebuilding the Jewish temple right next to the Dome of the Rock, the Mosque of Omar, which, of course, is the most holy place of the Muslim people, at least among the top three most holy places of the Muslim people. And the temple, the Jewish temple, will probably be built right next to it because evidently the Mosque of Omar, the Dome of the Rock, is not precisely in the right location for Solomon's temple and the second temple that came in the days of Ezra and Nehemiah. They misjudged and they put it in the wrong place. So we think that this European politician is going to begin to solve the Middle East crisis, the Palestinian crisis, by helping the Jewish people erect their Jewish temple where it actually belongs, and the Dome of the Rock's in the wrong place. And then we realize that there's going to be a 10-nation confederation in the end times, and we might imagine that there is going to be a 10-nation alliance that helps Antichrist, this great European politician, do all of that. And we're going to notice as well that the coalition, because of where the Roman Empire was, is going to include Europe as well as Middle Eastern nations. And the thing is, the Arab nations and the European nations don't stick together very well. To make them stick together would be trying to make iron stick together with clay. They just don't get along very well. And so you have a coalition, but it's an uneasy coalition. As I showed you a minute ago, this is the map of the mighty Roman Empire in about the time of Christ. This is a map of NATO, and you can see that it goes much farther north than the Mediterranean Sea. The Mediterranean Sea is at the bottom of this map. You see a lot goes above, but when you get to the Middle East and then below the Mediterranean Sea, there's no NATO presence there. So here's what it actually looks like. If you see the yellow line at the top, everything above that doesn't really matter. That wasn't really part of the old Roman Empire. So that's part of NATO, and we have the little NATO symbol everywhere, so you can see what is NATO. And we don't really care about anything north of that line. That wasn't part of the old Roman Empire. And then you see the yellow line at the bottom. Everything below that, we don't particularly care about that either. That wasn't part of the old Roman Empire. But in between those yellow lines, that's the place where the old Roman Empire had jurisdiction. And you can see that that's similar to NATO. And of course, since the capital of the old Roman Empire was Rome, Italy, right? And of course, next to that is the Greek peninsula. The most important part of this is what's on the north side of the Mediterranean Sea. What's under it is not quite as important. At this moment, these are the headlines that we have in our news constantly. The first one from February 5th, that wasn't very long ago, right? And Israeli minister tells his army, the Israeli army, to plan for Palestinians leaving Gaza. That's a hot button issue. Maybe you know that. Again, from February 5th. Unacceptable. European countries firmly reject Trump's plan to take over Gaza. It's upsetting. There's a problem and the world doesn't like it. From February 7th, European ministers come out against Trump's Gaza plan. Unacceptable, against international law. From CNBC in the bottom left side of that, I know you can't read that very well, but the headline is, how will the Middle East crisis evolve in the year 2025? So these are our current headlines, like from this past week. And all of this is happening and we have Daniel, 600 years before Jesus was born, as a 17-year-old kid saying, let me tell you what's going to happen here. Babylon is eventually, when I'm 80 years old, Babylon is going to fall to Persia. Like, okay. And then in the 300s, Persia is going to fall to Alexander the Great. Like, all right, we'll see if that works. And then after that, there are going to be these ships of Rome who stand up, Antiochus Epiphanes, the Greek Empire, and Rome is going to come, and you're going to have the mighty Roman Empire. And that'll take place 60 years before Messiah comes. Say, okay, Daniel, we'll just see if that happens. But you have to understand, besides the mighty Roman Empire, it's going to transition into something a little bit weird. It's going to be like this 10-nation coalition. You're going to say, wow, it's just like the Roman Empire, but then it's like, it doesn't stick together right. It's not okay. And when that happens, when you see that 10-nation alliance, it doesn't stick together very well. When you see that, then Messiah is going to come and conquer the world. And you're looking at this very moment in our current headlines. The area around the old Roman Empire is keenly interested in this immigration crisis and the Palestinian crisis. So keenly interested in it that they can't quit talking about it. They talk about it all the time in our news cycles. And Daniel is basically seeing that. So he says in verse 34, and all of this, you saw the four empires, and all of this, and you saw a stone in your dream. You saw this stone that just sort of cuts itself out of the mountain all by itself. A stone cut out without hands because God's doing it. It's not any human stone. And it strikes the image on its feet. So the last empire, the last hybrid weird part of the empire, it hits it on its feet, blows the whole thing into dust, and the wind carries it away. And then that stone, it becomes a great mountain and filled the whole earth. And as you saw, the feet and toes, part of potter's clay, part of iron, the kingdom shall be divided. In the days of these kings, the God of heaven shall set up a kingdom that shall never be destroyed. That's Armageddon. He's going to set up a kingdom that will never be destroyed. And the kingdom shall not be left to other people, but it will break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever. So when you get to this, not normal Roman Empire, but Roman Empire with a twist, Roman Empire in an altered state, that's when Jesus is going to come and strike the kingdoms of the world, blow them into powder, set up his own kingdom that grows into a mountain that will never go away, a kingdom that will never fail. This is Messiah's paradise kingdom on earth. It's talked about in chapter 2. When we get to chapter 7, we'll see it's talked about again. When we come to chapter 9, it's talked about again. And then Daniel is ready to finish. In verse 45, he says, "And as you saw that the stone was cut out of the mountain without hands, and that it broke in pieces the iron, the bronze, the clay, the silver, the gold, the great God has made known to the king what shall come to pass after this. And the dream is certain, and the interpretation of it is sure. King Nebuchadnezzar, you can take this to the bank. You are the head of gold. You're going to fall to the Medes and the Persians. And the Persians are going to fall to the Greeks. And the Greeks are going to fall to the mighty Roman Empire. And then something weird is going to happen with the Roman Empire. And they're going to piece it together. And it doesn't really piece together right. And when it looks like that, Messiah is going to come and bash the whole thing into powder. And he's going to take over the world and make a great kingdom that will never go away. And we call that Messiah's paradise kingdom on earth. We call that the millennium." And Daniel looks at the king and he says, "And the dream is certain, and the interpretation is sure." This is exactly what's going to happen. And people who hate the Bible look at that and they say, there is no way in God's universe that any man in 600 BC could have said one word about Persia conquering Babylon. Or if you could guess that, you could never guess that Greece would conquer Persia in the 300s. It can't be known. Nobody could have known that. And there is no way in the world that you could know that the mighty Roman Empire would push the Greek Empire back. Nobody knows that. Nobody could know that. And Daniel looks at the king and says, "I'm telling you, king, that's your dream. The dream is sure, and the interpretation is certain, and you can take that to the bank." And he was exactly right. And he's right about a lot of other things too. So then comes tranquility. Then the king Nebuchadnezzar fell on his face and worshipped Daniel and commanded that they should offer an offering and sweet odors unto him. I think that's what the king wanted to do, and he did it. But Daniel was saying, no, don't do that. He can't stop the king from doing what the king wants to do. In verse 47, the king answered to Daniel and said, "Of a truth, it is your God is a God of gods and a Lord of kings and a revealer of secrets, since you could reveal this secret." Then the king made Daniel a great man and gave him many gifts and made him ruler over the whole province of Babylon and chief of the governors of all the wise men. Now he's the boss of the astrologers, the Chaldeans. He's going to tell them how things are. And that's why when Jesus was born in Bethlehem, Magi came from the east. And they knew about Messiah because Daniel was their boss in the 500s BC, and he told them this was going to happen. Think, how would those wise men know to come looking for Messiah at about that time? Answer, Daniel told them. So Daniel becomes the chief of the wise men of Babylon. Then Daniel requested of the king, and he set his good friends Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego over the affairs of the province of Babylon. But Daniel sat in the gate of the king. Orchestration. Last week we talked about how beautiful it is that Daniel, a 17-year-old kid, was brought to the place where he could answer the king's request. And Daniel would have felt like, you know, the whole world was falling apart. And in reality, God was leading him to be exactly where he needed to be. But it wasn't just about Daniel's life. And it wasn't even just about Babylon. And it wasn't just about Babylon and Medo-Persia, or Babylon, Medo-Persia, and Greece, or Babylon, Medo-Persia, Greece, and Rome. It brought us all the way to the end of the world, the Battle of Armageddon, when the King, Jesus, takes over the world, brings paradise to earth. And Daniel was in the grip of God's orchestration, though he probably could never have imagined that when he was a 14-year-old kid. He was doing something really extraordinary. Now you. Do you understand that the Lord is orchestrating the events of your life? Do you believe it to the core of your being? When the Lord brings you to a place where you never wanted to be, are you able to understand that God rules in the affairs of men? And for those who are not interested in the things of God, well, their future is going to be catastrophic. But for you who love the Lord, your future is going to be grand. And it's all being orchestrated right now in ways that would absolutely amaze you if you could see it. So that's the orchestration of God. Kim, will you stand and be dismissed with prayer? Father God, we thank you so much for the book of Daniel. Person in this room right now who feels like the world is falling apart, every person right now who feels like there is no orchestration, I pray that they would see that you rule in the affairs of the whole world and you rule in the affairs of their lives too. And I pray that we would all just now collapse into your hands with gratitude and trust and dependence and realize that we have a wonderful God who loves us dearly as nobody else in the world ever could and who's a super genius at bringing a happy ending to our stories. I pray that we'd feel this in the core of our hearts as we dismiss in Jesus' name. Amen.